Underwood ordered his gamekeeper that December morning. I don't care how. Just make them disappear. It should have been simple. 20 wolves trapped in freezing water. Nature doing what man had been trying to do for centuries, removing the predators that threaten civilization. But Underwood hadn't counted on Luella Martin. The nobody. The poacher's daughter who should have known better than to interfere with a lord's business. By the time the sun set on that January day, Underwood would realize he'd made a fatal mistake. He'd underestimated a girl who had nothing left to lose. And he'd created an enemy that couldn't be bought, threatened, or killed. 20 wolves. One witness. And a debt that demanded payment in blood. 20 wolves. All saved. And in this moment, everything changes. If you're feeling what I'm feeling right now, if Luella's impossible courage is hitting you where it counts, please take 2 seconds to like this video. It tells me you want more stories that matter. Now, Lord Underwood is coming, and he's not happy. Let's see what happens next. Chapter 1. The Outcast of Blackpine. The bread was stale again. Luella Martin held the rock-hard loaf in her calloused hands, staring at it in the dim light of her cabin's single window. 3 days old. The baker in Blackpine Village only sold her the leftovers. The ones even the pigs wouldn't eat. She'd have to soak it in melted snow just to make it edible. At least he sells to you at all. Her stepmother Gail Fisher had sneered last week, her perfect blonde curls bouncing as she laughed. Most shops won't serve a Martin anymore. Not after what your father did. Luella's father had died 6 years ago, accused of poaching on Lord Underwood's land. They'd found him frozen in the woods, a deer carcass beside him. The shame had followed Luella, like a shadow ever since. Her stepmother had remarried within a year to wealthy Francisco Cantrell, a merchant who owned half the village. Gail had taken everything, the house, the savings, even Luella's mother's jewelry. All Luella got was this cabin, a shack, really. One room with a leaking roof, and a fireplace that barely kept the cold at bay. It sat at the edge of the forest, a 20-minute walk from the village proper. Far enough that people could forget she existed. Which was exactly how they liked it. Plain little Luella. The village children used to chant. Crooked nose and crooked soul. Just like her thieving father. Her nose had been broken when she was 12, courtesy of her stepsister Shelia Stanton, Gail's daughter from her first marriage. Shelia had accidentally slammed a door into Luella's face during an argument about a hairbrush. It had healed badly, leaving a noticeable bump on the bridge. Combined with Luella's dull brown hair, thin frame, and the permanent shadows under her gray eyes, she knew she'd never be called beautiful. Not like Shelia, with her porcelain skin and rosebud lips. Not like any of them. Luella placed the bread on her small table and wrapped her worn shawl tighter around her shoulders. The morning was brutal even inside the cabin. Her breath formed clouds. Outside, the temperature had dropped so low that the trees groaned under the weight of ice. She needed to check her traps. It was dangerous to go into the forest during a cold snap like this, but Luella had no choice. The 3 rabbits she'd caught last week were gone, their meat already eaten. If she didn't catch something today, she'd have nothing but stale bread until the thaw. She pulled on her father's old hunting boots, too large for her feet, stuffed with cloth to make them fit, and grabbed the walking stick she'd carved from pine. Her threadbare coat came last, patched so many times it looked like a quilt of mismatched brown fabrics. The door creaked open, and the cold hit her like a fist. Luella trudged through the snow, her boots crunching with each step. The forest was silent. No birds sang. No squirrels chattered. Even the wind seemed to hold its breath. Something was wrong. She'd lived on the edge of these woods her entire life. She knew their rhythms. Their moods. The forest was never this quiet unless something had disturbed it. Her first trap was empty. So was the second. At the third, she found tracks. Wolf tracks. Luella crouched down, studying the prints. Large. Recent. A whole pack had passed through here, maybe an hour ago. They were heading east, toward Black Pine Lake. Her stomach twisted. Wolves didn't usually come this close to the village. They kept to the deep forest, where game was plentiful and humans were scarce. For an entire pack to risk human territory meant something had driven them out. Or someone. Luella followed the tracks. She told herself she was just being cautious, making sure the wolves weren't circling back toward her cabin. But the truth was simpler. She was curious. And after 6 years of isolation, of being invisible to everyone in Black Pine, of living a life so small it barely left footprints in the snow, curiosity was all she had left. The tracks led her through a dense thicket of pines, across a frozen stream, and up a rocky slope. By the time she reached the top, her lungs burned from the cold and exertion. Below her, Black Pine Lake stretched out like a sheet of dark glass. And at its center, the ice had been broken, not naturally. Not by the freeze-thaw cycle or shifting currents. Someone had deliberately smashed holes in the surface, jagged wounds in the ice that exposed the black water beneath. And in those holes drowning were wolves. Luella's hand flew to her mouth. There must have been 20 of them, maybe more. Some were already dead, their gray bodies floating limply in the water. Others were still struggling, their claws scraping uselessly against the ice as they tried to pull themselves out. Their howls filled the air desperate, agonized sounds that made Luella's heart clench. This wasn't an accident. This was a trap. "No, no, no," she whispered, scrambling down the slope. She knew who'd done this. Everyone in Black Pine knew about Lord Philip Underwood's hatred of wolves. He'd lost a prize-hunting dog to a pack 3 years ago, and had sworn revenge ever since. But this was beyond revenge. This was cruelty. This was murder. Luella reached the lake's edge, and tested the ice with her walking stick. It held her weight, but barely. Cracks spiderwebbed out from where she stood. The nearest wolf was 10 feet away, thrashing weakly in the water. Its yellow eyes locked onto hers, and for a moment, neither of them moved. "I'm going to help you," Luella said, though she wasn't sure the wolf could understand. Just hold on." She dropped to her stomach and began crawling across the ice, distributing her weight as evenly as possible. Her father had taught her this, how to cross frozen lakes safely. "Spread yourself out," he'd said. "Make yourself flat. The ice can hold you if you don't give it a choice." The cold bit through her coat, through her dress, straight into her skin, but Luella kept crawling. The wolf watched her approach, its struggles slowing. It was exhausted. Hypothermia was setting in. "Come on," Luella urged, reaching the edge of the broken ice. "Give me your paw. Please." The wolf's eyes narrowed. It growled a low, warning sound that vibrated through the ice. "I know," Luella said softly. "I know you don't trust me. I wouldn't trust me either. But I'm all you've got right now." She extended her hand, palm up. Waiting. The wolf stared at her for what felt like an eternity. Then, slowly, it lifted one massive paw out of the water. Luella grabbed it, her fingers closing around coarse fur and cold flesh. The wolf was heavy, far heavier than she'd expected. She braced her feet against a ridge in the ice and pulled. Nothing. She pulled harder, her muscles screaming in protest. The wolf shifted, its other paw finding purchase on the ice. Together they hauled its body up and out of the water. It collapsed beside her, panting, shivering violently. "One," Luella breathed. "One down." She looked out at the lake. 19 more to go. The second wolf was easier, it was smaller, less waterlogged. Luella managed to drag it out within minutes. The third fought her, snapping at her hands even as she pulled it to safety. She nearly lost a finger. The fourth was already dead. By the time she reached the sixth wolf, her clothes were soaked through. Her hands were numb. She couldn't feel her feet anymore. But she kept going. 7. The villagers would call her insane if they saw her now. "Risking your life for animals," Gale would sneer. "That's exactly the kind of foolishness I'd expect from a Martin." 10. 11. 12. Her vision was starting to blur. The cold was no longer painful, it had moved past pain into something else. Something quiet and seductive. Her body wanted to stop. Wanted to lie down on the ice and rest. Just for a moment. 13. 14. "Come on," she told herself, her voice slurring. "Keep moving. Just keep moving." 15. 16. 17. 3 left. The ice groaned beneath her weight. She'd crossed this lake too many times. The surface was compromised, weakening with each pass. Luella crawled toward the 18th wolf. It was barely conscious. Its eyes half closed. She grabbed its scruff and pulled. The ice cracked. not a small crack. A deep, booming sound that echoed across the lake like thunder. Luella froze. Beneath her, she could see the fracture spreading a jagged line racing toward the shore. No, she whispered. Not yet. Please, not yet. She hauled the 18th wolf onto solid ice and crawled toward the 19th. The crack widened. Her hand closed around the wolf's paw. The ice gave way. Luella plunged into the water, the cold so intense it stopped her heart for a beat. She couldn't scream, couldn't breathe. The water filled her mouth, her nose, her lungs. She was going to die. Just like her father, alone and frozen in the woods that had raised her. Something grabbed her coat. Strong jaws clamped down on the fabric at her shoulder and yanked upward. Luella felt herself being dragged. Felt her body scrape against the jagged edge of broken ice. Then she was out, lying on solid ground, coughing up water. The wolves she'd saved stood in a semicircle around her. All 18 of them. They'd pulled her out. They'd saved her. Thank you, she gasped, shivering so hard her teeth rattled. Thank you. But the 19th wolf was still in the water. And beyond it. Barely visible in the farthest hole. The 20th. Luella tried to stand. Her legs buckled. One of the wolves, the first one she'd saved, stepped forward. It was massive, with silver-gray fur and intelligent eyes. It lowered its head and nudged her hand. Then looked toward the lake. I can't, Luella whispered. I'm sorry, I can't. The wolf nudged her again, more insistently. It wasn't a request. Luella grabbed the wolf's fur and used it to pull herself upright. Her vision swam, but she took one step forward, then another. The 19th wolf was easy. The pack had circled it, keeping it from going under. Luella just had to guide it to shore. But the 20th was different. It was larger than the others. Its fur was pure black, unusual for this region, and its eyes, they weren't yellow like the rest. They were amber, almost gold. Even half drowned, it radiated authority. The Alpha King. Luella crawled across the ice one last time, her body moving on instinct alone. She reached the hole and extended her hand. The black wolf looked at her. Really looked at her. And in that moment, Luella saw something that made her forget the cold, forget her exhaustion, forget everything. Recognition. Not just animal awareness, but genuine understanding. This wolf knew exactly what she'd done. Knew what it had cost her. It placed its massive paw in her hand. Together, they fought against the water, against the cold, against death itself. And together, they won. The Alpha King collapsed on the shore beside her, its sides heaving. The rest of the pack gathered around them both, their bodies forming a living windbreak against the brutal cold. Luella closed her eyes. She'd done it. 20 wolves. All saved. In the distance, she heard voices. Men's voices. Angry and getting closer. Saw tracks leading this way. If those beasts got loose, Martin Girl's cabin is nearby. You don't think. Lord Philip Underwood. And he was coming for his wolves. Coming for her. The Alpha King lifted its head. And its lips pulled back in a snarl. The pack rose as one, forming a wall between Luella and the approaching voices. And Luella realized something that would have made her father proud. She wasn't alone anymore. Not ever again. Chapter 2. When Mercy Becomes Treason. Lord Philip Underwood emerged from the tree line like a specter of winter itself. Tall, imposing, wrapped in a fur-lined cloak that had cost more than Luella's cabin. Behind him trudged 6 men, all carrying rifles, all wearing the grim expressions of those who'd been pulled from warm hearths on a bitter morning. Luella recognized them all. Ted Boyd, the blacksmith. Guy Bolton, who ran the general store. Daniel Carroll, Underwood's head gamekeeper. Men who'd known her father. Men who'd watched her grow up and hadn't lifted a finger when Gale threw her out. Men who wouldn't hesitate to shoot her if Underwood gave the word. Well, Underwood said, his voice carrying across the frozen lake. Little Luella Martin. I should have known. Luella tried to stand, but her legs were still trembling from exhaustion and cold. The wolves pressed closer around her, their combined body heat the only thing keeping her conscious. Like father. Like daughter. Underwood continued, stepping onto the ice with the confidence of a man who owned everything he surveyed. He stole my deer, you steal my wolves. They're not yours, Luella said, her voice hoarse. They're not anyone's. Underwood's laugh was sharp and humorless. Everything in these woods is mine, girl. The trees, the game, the very snow you're kneeling in. Your hovel of a cabin sits on my land. You exist at my sufferance. He gestured to the wolves surrounding Luella. These beasts killed my best hunting dog. Tore him apart while he was doing his duty. I paid good money to have them tracked, trapped, and drowned. And you? His eyes narrowed. You've undone hours of work. They were drowning, Luella said, forcing herself to meet his gaze despite the fear clawing at her chest. Suffering. I couldn't just... Yes, that was rather the point. Underwood pulled off his leather gloves, one finger at a time. Wolves are vermin, Miss Martin. Dangerous, worthless vermin. The world is better off without them, the Alpha King snarled, a sound so deep and menacing that two of Underwood's men took an involuntary step backward. Shoot them, Underwood ordered calmly. All of them. The girl can watch what her mercy has earned. Six rifles rose in unison. No. Luella threw herself in front of the nearest wolf. Please. They haven't done anything. Move aside, Miss Martin. Underwood's voice was cold now, all pretense of civility gone. Unless you'd like to share their fate, Luella's mind raced. She was outnumbered, outgunned, and so cold she could barely feel her own body. The wolves were exhausted from their ordeal. If shooting started, it would be a massacre. But then she remembered something her father had taught her. Something she'd nearly forgotten in the 6 years since his death. The law, she said, her voice stronger now. You can't just execute animals on public land without proper documentation. Underwood's eyebrow arched. Public land. Black Pine Lake belongs to the Crown, not to your estate. The border is marked, it's 50 yards behind where you're standing. Luella pointed to a line of stones barely visible through the snow. Your gamekeeper would know that. Ask him. All eyes turned to Daniel Carroll. The gamekeeper shifted uncomfortably, his rifle lowering slightly. She's right. My lord. The lake is Crown property. Has been since the old king's time. Underwood's jaw tightened. A technicality. A law, Luella corrected. You'd need permission from the magistrate to conduct a call on Crown land. Written permission, with witnesses and documentation. She'd learned this from her father's trial. From listening to the lawyers debate property rights and hunting regulations while her family fell apart. And by the time you ride to town and back, she continued. These wolves will be long gone into the deep forest where even you can't follow. For a long moment, Underwood simply stared at her. The lake was silent except for the wind and the soft panting of the wolves. Then Underwood smiled. It was not a pleasant smile. Clever girl, he said softly. Your father was clever too. It didn't save him. The threat hung in the air like frost. I'll get my permission, Underwood continued. And when I do, I'll come back. For the wolves. His eyes locked onto Luella's. And for anyone harboring them, he turned on his heel and strode back toward the tree line. His men followed, though several cast backward glances at Luella and her unlikely guardians. When they were finally out of sight, Luella's legs gave out completely. She collapsed into the snow, her body shaking so violently she thought her bones might crack. The wolves surrounded her immediately, lying down in a tight circle with Luella at the center. Their combined warmth was shocking, like being wrapped in living blankets. The Alpha King positioned itself directly beside her, its massive body pressed against her back. Thank you, Luella whispered, though she wasn't sure if she was thanking them for their warmth or for not running when they had the chance. The Alpha King's amber eyes studied her with that same unsettling intelligence she'd seen before. Then it did something that made Luella's breath catch. It bowed its head and touched its nose to her forehead. The gesture was so gentle, so deliberate, that tears sprang to Luella's eyes. No one had shown her tenderness in 6 years. No one had touched her with anything but contempt or violence. You're welcome, she said, understanding somehow that the gesture was gratitude. Recognition of the debt between them. But gratitude wouldn't be enough when Underwood returned with his permission and his rifles. Luella forced herself to think. She needed to get home. Needed to get warm before hypothermia claimed her. The wolves needed shelter too, somewhere away from Underwood's land. Somewhere they could hide until what? They couldn't hide forever. Underwood owned half the county. He had money, influence, and the law on his side. Once he got his paperwork, he'd hunt these wolves to extinction, and Luella for interfering. For embarrassing him in front of his men, he'd make sure she paid dearly. Unless, an idea sparked in Luella's frozen mind, desperate, possibly insane, but it was all she had. "Can you understand me?" she asked the Alpha King. The great wolf's ears pricked forward. "I'm going to take that as a yes." Luella pushed herself into a sitting position, every muscle screaming in protest. "I can't protect you. I'm nobody, just a dead poacher's daughter living in a shack at the edge of the forest. But I know someone who might help. Someone who has more power than Underwood, at least on paper." The wolves watched her with unblinking attention. "Prince Morgan," Luella said. "The king's youngest son. He's eccentric. Everyone knows he cares more about animals than people. There are stories about him rescuing wounded hawks, nursing sick horses back to health. 2 years ago, he passed a law protecting lynx from hunting." She looked at the Alpha King. "If I could get to him, if I could tell him what Underwood did, he might intervene. Might declare the pack under royal protection." It was a long shot. More than that, it was nearly impossible. Prince Morgan lived in the capital, 3 days' ride away. Luella had no horse, no money for passage, and no reason to believe a prince would grant audience to a commoner. Especially a commoner with her family's reputation. But the alternative was watching these wolves die. The Alpha King stood and shook the snow from its fur. It looked toward the forest, then back at Luella. Then it did something extraordinary. It walked over to where her walking stick had fallen, picked it up gently in its jaws, and brought it to her. The other wolves rose as one, forming two lines like an honor guard. They were waiting for her to lead them. "Oh," Luella breathed. "Oh, you're serious." The Alpha King's expression, if a wolf could have an expression, seemed to say, "You saved us. Now we follow you." Luella took the walking stick with numb fingers and used it to lever herself upright. Her soaked clothes were already freezing, turning stiff as boards. She'd have maybe an hour before hypothermia became life-threatening. "My cabin first," she decided. "I need dry clothes. Then we figure out how to get to the capital without being shot." The journey back should have taken 20 minutes. With Luella's frozen limbs and exhausted body, it took nearly an hour. The wolves flanked her the entire way, their presence keeping other predators at bay and their bodies breaking the worst of the wind. When her cabin finally came into view, Luella wanted to weep with relief, but her relief died the moment she saw the smoke. Not from her chimney, she'd let the fire die that morning to conserve wood. From the village, black smoke, billowing up in thick columns, visible even from this distance. And beneath the smoke, she could hear bells, the alarm bells that only rang during emergencies. "Fire, attack, disaster." "No," Luella whispered, breaking into a stumbling run. The wolves raced ahead of her, faster and more sure-footed on the snow. By the time Luella reached the cabin's door, her lungs were burning and her vision was spotting. She burst inside, stripped off her frozen clothes with shaking hands, and pulled on everything dry she owned. Two dresses layered on top of each other, her thickest stockings, her father's old wool sweater. She grabbed the emergency pack she kept by the door. Flint and steel, dried meat, a knife, rope. Then she ran back outside. The wolves were pacing, agitated by the smoke and the distant sounds of chaos. Luella's mind spun. She needed to check on the village, needed to know what was happening. But if she showed up with 20 wolves in tow, there'd be panic, shooting, more death. "Stay here," she told the Alpha King, knowing even as she said it how absurd it was to give orders to a wild animal. "Stay hidden. I'll come back." The Alpha King growled, not menacingly, but in clear disagreement. "I have to," Luella insisted. "If people see you, they'll—" A scream cut through the air. Human. Terrified. Close. Too close. Luella spun toward the sound and saw a figure stumbling through the trees. A woman, her fine dress torn and muddied, her face streaked with ash and tears. Shelia Stanton, her stepsister, and behind her, emerging from the smoke-hazed forest like demons from a nightmare. Raiders. Three of them. rough men in mismatched armor, carrying torches and blades, hunting her stepsister like prey. Luella's hand went to the knife at her belt. The wolves' hackles rose as one, and in that moment, Luella understood with perfect clarity. Everything was about to change. Chapter 3. The Cost of Standing Up. Shelia didn't see Luella at first. Her eyes were wild with terror, fixed on the men behind her. She was running blind, crashing through snow-laden branches. Her expensive silk dress, the one Gale had commissioned from the capital last month, hanging in tatters around her legs. One of the raiders laughed, a cruel sound that echoed through the trees. "Come on, pretty bird. We just want to talk. Talk and maybe a little more," another added, his scarred face splitting into a grin. They were playing with her. They could have caught Shelia already if they'd wanted to. Instead, they were letting her run. Letting her exhaust herself, savoring her fear like fine wine. Luella's grip tightened on her knife. The blade was small, meant for skinning rabbits and cutting rope. Against three armed raiders, it was less than useless. But she had something else. "Here," Luella called out, stepping into Shelia's path. Her stepsister's head snapped up. For a moment, recognition flickered across her face, followed immediately by something that might have been relief or might have been disgust. With Shelia, it was always hard to tell. "Lou," Shelia gasped, stumbling to a halt. "They're the village, everyone. I know. Get behind me. Are you insane?" Shelia's eyes darted between Luella and the approaching raiders. You don't even have a behind me. Now." Something in Luella's voice made Shelia obey. She stumbled behind Luella's thin frame, her breathing ragged and panicked. The three raiders emerged from the trees, spreading out in a semicircle. They were seasoned fighters, Luella could tell from the way they moved. The casual confidence of men who'd done violence so often it had become routine. The one in the center, the leader, had a fresh burn scar running down his left cheek, his torch cast dancing shadows across his face. "Well, well, two birds for the price of one. You're on private property," Luella said, proud that her voice didn't shake. "Leave now. And I won't report this to Lord Underwood." The raiders laughed. "Lord Underwood?" The scarred man grinned. "That bastard's the one who hired us, sweetheart. Told us the village had been getting too comfortable, not paying their protection fees on time. Said we could have anything we could carry, long as we burned the tax collector's office and his records." Luella's blood went cold. "You're lying. Am I?" The raider gestured back toward the smoke. "Why do you think his manor's untouched? Why do you think his men aren't fighting back?" Behind her, Shelia made a small, wounded sound. Her mother's new husband, Francisco Cantrell, was the tax collector. "My stepfather," Shelia's voice broke. "Is he?" "Dead by now, probably," the raider said cheerfully. "Don't worry, pretty thing. You won't be lonely for long." They advanced. Luella raised her knife. "Don't. Or what? You'll gut us with that little pig sticker?" The scarred man laughed. "Tell you what, girl. You give us the blonde, we'll let you run. Otherwise," the Alpha King stepped out of the shadows. Then another wolf. And another. Within seconds, 20 wolves materialized from the forest like ghosts, forming a wall of fur and fangs between the raiders and their prey. The Alpha King positioned itself directly in front of Luella, its lips pulled back to reveal teeth that looked like ivory daggers. The raiders' confident smirks vanished. "What the—" The scarred man took a step back, his torch wavering. "Where did they—" The Alpha King snarled, a sound so primal and menacing that even Luella felt her instincts screaming to run. "Back away," Luella said quietly. "Drop your weapons. Leave the way you came." You're controlling them?" The raider's eyes were wide now, jumping between Luella and the wolves. "You're some kind of witch." Luella said nothing. Let him think what he wanted. Fear was better than courage right now. For a long moment, no one moved. Then one of the other raiders, younger, less scarred, dropped his sword. "I'm not dying for a few coins," he muttered, backing away. "This isn't worth it, coward," the scarred man spat, but his hand was shaking on his torch. The third raider had already disappeared into the trees. "This isn't over," the leader said, still retreating. "Underwood will hear about this. About you and your demon wolves." "Tell him," Luella said, Tell him Luella Martin sends her regards. The raider turned and ran. The moment he was out of sight, Luella's legs buckled. She caught herself on her walking stick, breathing hard. Behind her, Shelia was sobbing. He's dead. My stepfather's dead. They burned everything. We don't know that, Luella said, though the smoke in the distance suggested otherwise. We need to get to the village, check for survivors. With them? Shelia pointed at the wolves, her face pale. Lou, what have you done? What are these things? They're wolves. I saved them. They saved me. Luella turned to face her stepsister. And just now. They saved you. Shelia's mouth opened and closed. For once in her life, she seemed at a loss for words. Can you walk? Luella asked. Yes, I think so. Then let's go. The journey to Black Pine Village was like walking through a nightmare. Smoke hung thick in the air, making every breath taste of ash and burning wood. They passed bodies in the snow, villagers who'd tried to flee, cut down from behind. Luella recognized Ted Boyd's youngest son among them. He'd been 14. Shelia vomited twice. Luella kept moving. The wolves flanked them like silent guardians. Several peeled off as they walked, disappearing into the smoke, only to return minutes later with survivors' terrified villagers, who the wolves herded toward Luella with surprising gentleness. By the time they reached the village square, they had gathered 17 people. Men, women, children. All in shock. All covered in soot and blood. The village itself was devastated. Half the buildings were still burning. The tax collector's office, Francisco Cantrell's office, was nothing but a skeleton of blackened timber. Mama! Shelia screamed, breaking away from the group. Mama! She ran toward the burning wreckage. Luella caught her before she could do something stupid. Let me go. Shelia thrashed in her grip. She might be in there. She might. Look. Luella pointed. Across the square, near the well, a group of survivors huddled together, and at their center, wrapped in a borrowed cloak, was Gail Fisher. Shelia's mother was alive. Shelia broke free and ran. Mother and daughter collided in a desperate embrace, both crying, both talking over each other. Luella watched from a distance, feeling nothing, no relief, no joy. Just the familiar emptiness that came from being outside looking in. One of the villagers, a woman Luella vaguely recognized from the bakery, approached her cautiously. You brought the wolves. It wasn't a question. It was an accusation. I did, Luella said. They're dangerous. Wild. They'll turn on us. They saved you, Luella pointed out. Several of you. They could have run when the raiders came. Instead, they helped. The woman's jaw tightened. Wolves are wolves. They can't be trusted. Neither can Lord Underwood, apparently. Luella kept her voice level. Those raiders admitted he hired them. This destruction, all of it is on him. Murmurs rippled through the survivors. Some looked skeptical. Others angry. A few looked toward the manor on the hill. Underwood's estate conspicuously untouched by fire. That's a serious accusation, said a man's voice. Luella turned. Daniel Carroll, Underwood's gamekeeper, stepped forward. He'd shed his rifle somewhere. His face was smudged with ash. It's the truth, Luella said. The raiders told us themselves. Underwood wanted the tax records destroyed. He used them to do it. And you have proof of this. Daniel's eyes were hard. Or just the word of criminals. The word of criminals who had no reason to lie while they were threatening us. Luella met his gaze. Where were you during the attack, Mr. Carroll? Where were any of Underwood's men? Daniel's silence was answer enough. They knew, someone whispered. They had to know. He burned us out, another voice said, louder. That bastard burned us out to hide his embezzling. Calm down, Daniel said, raising his hands. We don't know. 17 dead. Luella cut him off. Her voice was sharp enough to silence the growing crowd. 17 people are dead, because your lord wanted to cover his tracks. How many more would have died if we hadn't stopped those raiders? You stopped them with monsters, the baker's wife said. With demons. With wolves who chose to help instead of run. Luella's patience was fraying. Which is more than I can say for your lord. A child's voice piped up from the crowd. The wolves found my brother. They led me to him when I was lost in the smoke. Another voice. One of them pulled me out of a burning building. They protected us. The narrative was shifting. Luella could see it in people's faces, the fear giving way to confusion, then to something that might become gratitude. But Gail Fisher had finally noticed her daughter's savior. You. She stalked toward Luella. Her face contorted with rage. You brought those beasts here. You put my daughter in danger. Those beasts saved your daughter, Luella corrected. From raiders your new husband likely helped hire. Gail's hand cracked across Luella's face. The square went silent. Luella's cheek burned. Blood trickled from her lip where Gail's ring had split the skin. But she didn't move. Didn't raise her hand to the injury. She just stared at her stepmother with 6 years of accumulated cold fury. Feel better? Luella asked softly. The Alpha King growled. A sound that made several people stumble backward. The pack moved forward as one, surrounding Luella protectively. Call them off, Gail whispered, fear finally breaking through her anger. Luella, call them off. They're not mine to command, Luella said. They act of their own will, just like I do. She turned to address the crowd. Lord Underwood will come back. He'll bring soldiers. Proper ones this time. He'll blame this attack on someone, probably me. He'll say the wolves are dangerous, that I'm a witch, that we need to be destroyed for everyone's safety. No one contradicted her. I'm leaving, Luella continued. Tonight. I'm going to the capital to seek audience with Prince Morgan. I'm going to tell him what happened here. What Underwood did. She paused. The wolves are coming with me. Anyone who wants to join us is welcome. Anyone who wants to stay and trust Underwood's mercy. That's your choice. Silence. Then Shelia stepped forward. I'll come. Gail grabbed her daughter's arm. Absolutely not. I forbid it. You forbid? Shelia's voice was hollow. Mama. Your husband is dead. Our home is ash. We have nothing. Less than nothing. We'll be in debt for years trying to rebuild. We'll manage. We always. By selling me off to the highest bidder. Shelia's laugh was bitter. That was your plan, wasn't it? Marry me to some wealthy merchant to recoup your losses. Well, I'm done being your prize mare. She pulled free of Gail's grip and stood beside Luella. I'm going to the capital. With or without your blessing. Other voices joined in. I'll come. Me too. My family's got nothing left here anyway. Within minutes, 12 people had volunteered. Not a large group, but larger than Luella had expected. We leave at dawn, Luella said. Pack light. Weapons if you have them. Food for 3 days. She looked at the wolves, particularly the Alpha King. We're going to need to move fast. Can you? The Alpha King dipped its head. Once. Deliberately. Understanding passed between them. This was no longer about saving wolves from drowning. This was about justice. About standing against the kind of cruelty that burned villages and called it business. This was war. And Luella Martin, the plain, crooked-nosed daughter of a dead poacher, had just declared it. Chapter 4. The Road to Retribution. Dawn came cold and gray, the sky heavy with unshed snow. Luella stood outside her cabin for what might be the last time. A pack slung over her shoulder and her father's knife at her belt. The structure looked even more pathetic in the morning light. Walls that barely kept out the wind, a roof that leaked in 3 places, a door that hung crooked on its hinges. 6 years she'd lived here. 6 years of surviving on scraps and stubbornness. She felt nothing looking at it now. No nostalgia. No regret. Just relief that she was finally leaving. The 12 volunteers had assembled in the clearing behind the cabin, away from prying eyes. They were a motley group. Shelia, still wearing her ruined dress under a borrowed cloak. Tom Ward, the butcher's assistant, carrying a meat cleaver. Annette Matthews and her 2 young sons. Brooke Knox, a widow with arms strong from years of laundering. And 6 others whose names Luella was still learning. The wolves waited at the forest's edge, 20 shadows against the snow. This is insane, muttered Chong Cherry, a farmhand who'd lost everything in the fire. We're trusting our lives to wild animals and a girl who talks to them. That girl saved my children, Annette said sharply, pulling her boys closer. The wolves led us out of the smoke when we couldn't see. I'll trust them before I trust Underwood. Underwood's going to send men after us, Tom said, testing the weight of his cleaver. We all know that, right? We're fugitives now. Then we'd better move fast. Luella adjusted her pack and turned to the group. The capital is 3 days northeast by the main road, but we can't use the main road. Underwood's men will be watching for us there. We'll have to go through the Thornwood, several people gasped. One woman made a warning sign. The Thornwood? Chong's face paled. That forest is cursed. People go in and don't come out. People go in unprepared and get lost. Luella corrected. My father used to trap there. I know the paths. She looked at the Alpha King, who had moved to stand beside her. And we have guides who know the forest better than any human. The great black wolf's amber eyes gleamed with what might have been amusement. We'll travel during daylight, make camp before dark, Luella continued. The wolves will scout ahead and behind, watch for pursuit. If we're lucky, we'll reach the capital in 4 days instead of three. And if we're not lucky? Shelia asked quietly. Luella met her stepsister's eyes. Then we fight. They set out within the hour, following a game trail that wound northeast into the deep forest. The wolves ranged around them in a loose perimeter, some ahead, some behind, some flanking. The Alpha King remained at Luella's side, matching her pace perfectly. The first few hours passed in tense silence. Everyone jumped at shadows, flinched at snapping branches. But gradually, as the forest enveloped them and no pursuit materialized, people began to relax. Annette's younger son, who couldn't have been more than 7, tugged on Luella's sleeve. Miss? Can I pet one? I don't think, Luella started, but the Alpha King had already turned its massive head toward the boy. The child froze, his eyes going wide. The Alpha King lowered its head and gently bumped the boy's hand with its nose. A smile broke across the child's face, the first smile Luella had seen since the attack. Small fingers buried themselves in thick black fur. He's soft, the boy whispered in wonder. Mama, he's so soft. Other children in the group crept closer. Soon three wolves were surrounded by young ones, their fears forgotten in the simple joy of touching something wild and beautiful. Careful, their parents warned. But even they were smiling now. They really are protecting us, Brooke murmured, watching a gray wolf herd a wandering child back toward the group. I've never seen anything like it. Neither have I, Luella admitted. But I'm grateful for it. They stopped for a brief lunch around midday, dried meat and hard bread eaten standing up, no fires to give away their position. One of the scouts, a young wolf, with distinctive white markings, returned from the south and made a series of low sounds to the Alpha King. The Alpha King's ears went flat against its skull. What is it? Luella asked, though she already knew the answer. The Alpha King looked toward the south, then back at Luella. Its meaning was clear. They're coming. How far? Luella pressed. The wolf pawed the ground 3 times. 3 hours, maybe. Possibly less. We need to move, Luella announced to the group. Underwood's men are behind us. The brief moment of peace shattered. Parents grabbed children. Tom gripped his cleaver. Shelia's face went white. How many? Chong asked. I don't know, but we can't outrun horses carrying soldiers. Luella's mind raced. We need to slow them down. How? Tom demanded. We've got a meat cleaver, a few knives, and some wolves. They'll have guns and armor. Luella looked at the forest around them. They were entering the Thornwood now. The trees grew thicker here. Their branches twisted and gnarled. The undergrowth was dense with thorny bushes that gave the forest its name. The forest itself, she said slowly. We use the forest. An hour later, when Underwood's hunting party reached the game trail, they found it blocked. Trees had fallen across the path not naturally, but deliberately felled to create a barrier. Behind the trees, the thorny undergrowth had been woven together into an impenetrable wall of brambles. What in the Lord Philip Underwood reined in his horse, staring at the obstruction? Behind him, 8 mounted men, and twice that many on foot, came to a halt. Daniel Carroll dismounted and examined the trees. Cut recently, my lord. Within the last hour. And these brambles, they've been moved, shaped. This isn't natural. Obviously it's not natural, you idiot. Underwood snapped. The Martin girl did this. She's trying to slow us down. With respect, my lord, one girl couldn't move these trees, not even with help from those refugees. Daniel ran his hand along a massive trunk. This oak must weigh a ton. It would take a dozen men with ropes and pulleys to. A howl cut through the air. Long, mournful, and close. The horses whinnied nervously. Several men reached for their rifles. The wolves, someone whispered. She's got the wolves working for her. Wolves don't fell trees, Underwood said. But his voice lacked conviction. Wolves don't build barricades. Another howl answered the first. Then another. They came from all directions north, south, east, west, surrounding the hunting party. How many are there? One soldier asked, his rifle tracking shadows between the trees. My lord, perhaps we should, Daniel began. We push forward, Underwood cut him off. Clear this obstruction. We're not being deterred by some frightened animals and a girl with delusions of grandeur. It took them 2 hours to clear the barricade. By the time they did, the sun was sinking toward the horizon, and they'd lost their quarry's trail. They could have gone anywhere, Daniel said, studying the forest floor. The wolves' tracks are everywhere, covering the human prints. Underwood's face was rigid with fury. Then we split up, cover more ground. My lord, that's an order, Carol. They split into four groups, each headed in a different direction. Swallowed by the darkening thornwood, none of them saw the wolves watching from the shadows. None of them noticed when their tracks began to circle back on themselves. And when darkness fell completely, when the forest became a maze of identical trees and thorny passages, they realized they were lost. All of them. Miles away. Luella's group made camp in a natural hollow surrounded by ancient oaks. They'd covered twice the distance they'd planned, thanks to the wolves finding a faster route through the Thornwood's labyrinth. We actually escaped, Shelia said, staring at the small fire Tom had coaxed to life. I didn't think we would. We're not safe yet, Luella cautioned. Underwood will find his way out eventually. We need to keep moving at first light. How did you know? Brooke asked. How to build those barricades, I mean. How to trap them. Luella poked at the fire with a stick. My father taught me. He said the forest provides everything you need. Shelter, food, defense, if you know how to ask. He sounds like he was a good man, Annette said softly. He was. Luella's throat tightened. They said he was a poacher. A thief. But he only ever took what we needed to survive. Never more than that. And Underwood killed him for it, Tom said, his voice hard. Just like he killed my employer. Just like he burned the village. The group fell silent, each lost in their own thoughts about what they'd lost. The Alpha King moved closer to Luella, its warmth pressing against her side. She buried her fingers in its fur, drawing comfort from its solid presence. Can I ask you something? Shelia said hesitantly. About them, the wolves. Luella nodded. Why? Why are they helping us? Animals don't do this. They don't understand justice or revenge or, Shelia gestured helplessly. Why? Luella looked at the Alpha King. Its amber eyes reflected the firelight deep and knowing. I think, Luella said slowly. They understand more than we give them credit for. I saved their lives. Now they're saving mine. It's not about domestication or training. It's about... She searched for the right word. Recognition. They see me. They see us. And they've chosen to stand with us. That's terrifying, Chong muttered. Why? Luella asked. Because it means animals have agency? Free will? The ability to choose their own path? Because it means they could choose differently, Chong said. Today they protect us. Tomorrow. Tomorrow they'll still protect us. Luella cut him off. Because we're not Underwood. We're not cruel. We don't hunt them for sport or drown them for revenge. We treat them with respect. She stood, addressing the group. Every one of you had a choice back in Blackpine. You could have stayed. Could have trusted Underwood to take care of you. To rebuild what he destroyed. But you chose to come with me instead. With a nobody. With the daughter of a poacher. Why? No one answered immediately. Finally, Annette spoke. Because you saved my boys. Because when everyone else was running or hiding, you stood up to those raiders with nothing but a kitchen knife and faith. Because Underwood is a monster, Tom added. And monsters need to be stopped. Exactly. Luella nodded. The wolves made the same choice. They could have run back to the deep forest after I pulled them from the lake. Instead, they stayed. They fought for us. They're still fighting for us. She looked each person in the eye. Tomorrow, we push hard. We'll reach the edge of the Thornwood by nightfall if we're lucky. The day after, we'll be in civilized lands again, places with roads and inns and law. We'll need to be careful. Underwood has influence in the cities, too. How do we get an audience with Prince Morgan? Shelia asked. We're refugees. Commoners. The palace guards won't even let us through the gates. Luella had been thinking about that problem all day. We make noise. Big noise. We arrive with 20 wolves and a story about a lord who burned his own village. Word will spread fast. Someone will bring it to the prince's attention. Or they'll arrest us for disturbing the peace, Chong said. Maybe. Luella shrugged. But we've come this far. We might as well see it through. The fire crackled. Somewhere in the darkness, a wolf howled not in warning, but in song. Others joined in, creating a harmony that made Luella's skin prickle with something that wasn't quite fear. They're beautiful, Annette's older son whispered. Why did everyone always tell us to be afraid? Because fear is easier than understanding, Luella said. And understanding requires seeing past the surface. Seeing what's inside. She thought of her father's words, the ones that had haunted her since his death. Beauty doesn't matter. It's what's inside that counts. He'd been right. Just not in the way he'd meant. The wolves weren't beautiful by human standards. They were predators, all fangs and claws and wild strength. But inside, in the parts that mattered, they had honor, loyalty, a sense of justice that most humans had lost. And Luella? She'd never been beautiful either. Crooked nose. Plain face. The daughter of a criminal. But she'd pulled 20 wolves from freezing water. She'd stood against raiders with nothing but a knife. She'd led refugees through an impossible forest while Lord Underwood's hunting party got lost in circles. Maybe her father had been right after all. Maybe what was inside really did count for more. Get some rest, Luella told the group. The wolves will keep watch. Tomorrow's going to be a long day. As people settled into their bedrolls, Shelia moved to sit beside Luella. For a long moment, neither spoke. I'm sorry, Shelia finally said. For everything. For the door. For your nose. For being cruel because mother told me to be. Luella studied her stepsister's face. The firelight caught the tear tracks on Shelia's cheeks. Why now? Luella asked. Why apologize now, after 6 years? Because I almost died yesterday, Shelia said simply. And the person who saved me was the one I'd hurt the most. I think I need to be better than I was. Better than mother raised me to be. Luella considered this. Part of her wanted to hold on to the anger, to nurse it like the wolves had nursed their wounds in the freezing water. But what good would that do? Apology accepted, she said. But actions matter more than words. Show me you've changed. Shelia nodded. I will. I promise. The Alpha King raised its head, ears pricked forward. A moment later, three scouts returned from the perimeter and made their report in low growls and postures. What are they saying? Shelia asked. Underwood's men are still lost, Luella translated, reading the wolves' body language. They're scattered, confused. The forest has them. Good. Shelia's voice was hard. Let them stay lost. Let them know what it feels like to be helpless. Luella glanced at her stepsister in surprise. Maybe Shelia really was changing. Or maybe they all were. The fire burned low. The stars emerged between the twisted branches overhead. And in the darkness of the Thornwood, surrounded by wolves and refugees and the ruins of her old life, Luella Martin finally allowed herself to hope. Maybe they'd reach the capital. Maybe Prince Morgan would listen. Maybe justice wasn't just a fairy tale told to comfort the powerless. The Alpha King laid its head on her lap, and Luella stroked its fur until sleep finally claimed her. Tomorrow would bring new challenges. But tonight, for the first time in 6 years, she wasn't alone. Chapter 5. The Merchant's Gambit. The second day of travel brought them out of the Thornwood and into gentler country, rolling hills dotted with farms and small hamlets. The landscape should have been comforting after the oppressive maze of twisted trees, but Luella found herself missing the forest's concealment. Here. They were exposed. Visible. We look like a traveling circus, Tom muttered, eyeing the wolves that flanked their ragged column. 20 wolves, a dozen refugees, and not a copper between us. How exactly do we plan to eat when our supplies run out? It was a fair question. They'd been rationing carefully, but their food would last maybe 2 more days. After that, there's a market town ahead, Luella said, consulting the mental map her father had taught her. Millbrook, we should reach it by afternoon. A town. Chong's voice rose in alarm. We can't walk into a town with these wolves. They'll shoot us on sight. Not if we're careful. Luella had been thinking about this problem since dawn. The wolves stay in the woods outside town. A few of us go in to buy supplies. The rest wait with the pack. And if someone recognizes us? Shelia asked. If word's already spread about Black Pine, then we run. Luella's jaw set. But we need food. We need information about the road ahead. We don't have a choice. The Alpha King made a low sound, not quite a growl, more like a question. I know you don't like it either, Luella said, scratching behind its ears. But you'll terrify the townspeople. We need to appear normal. Non-threatening. The wolf's expression suggested it had opinions about that strategy, but it didn't argue. They reached the outskirts of Millbrook just after noon. It was larger than Black Pine, maybe 300 people. With proper streets and a market square, smoke rose from chimneys, children played in the streets, everything looked so normal. Luella felt a pang of longing for that normalcy. For a life where the biggest worry was stale bread, not fleeing a vengeful lord with an army. The wolves stay here, she instructed, gesturing to a copse of trees with good sightlines to the town. Tom, Brooke, you're with me. Everyone else waits. If we're not back in 2 hours, assume something went wrong and head northeast without us. Lou, Shelia started. No arguments. Those are my terms. The Alpha King pushed its head against her hand, amber eyes intense. Luella met its gaze and saw the concern there. I'll be careful, she promised. I didn't survive Underwood's raiders just to get caught buying turnips. The walk into Millbrook was surreal. After 2 days in the forest with wolves, the sounds of human civilization felt alien cartwheels on cobblestones. Merchants hawking wares, gossip exchanged at well pumps. Act natural, Luella whispered to her companions. We're just travelers, nothing suspicious. Tom snorted. Right. 3 people in ash-stained clothes with no wagon, no horses, and no visible means of support. Perfectly natural. But no one stopped them as they entered the market square. Millbrook was a trading hub. Strangers were common enough not to draw immediate suspicion. Luella headed for a vegetable stall, mentally calculating what they could afford with the few coins she'd grabbed from her cabin. Bread, dried beans, maybe some salted meat if... Terrible business about Black Pine. Luella froze. The speaker was an older woman at the next stall, talking to the vegetable merchant. Burned to the ground, they say, the woman continued. Raiders, killed dozens. Lord Underwood's offered a reward, the merchant replied, arranging his turnips. 5 gold pieces for information leading to the capture of the perpetrators. Luella's blood went cold. Perpetrators? The woman asked. I heard it was raiders. Oh, it was. But apparently some locals helped them. A girl named Martin, daughter of that poacher from years back, she led the raiders to the tax collector's office. Showed them where the records were kept. Luella's hands clenched into fists. The lie was so bold. So complete, it took her breath away. That's horrible, the woman said. Why would she do such a thing? Revenge, most like. Her father was hanged for theft. Girl probably held a grudge. The merchant shook his head. Lord Underwood says she's dangerous. Unhinged. She's got a pack of wolves under some kind of spell, dark magic, they're saying. Wolves? The woman made a warning sign. Saints preserve us. Tom grabbed Luella's elbow. We need to leave, he hissed. Now. But Luella was staring at a poster nailed to the market bulletin board. Even from a distance, she could see the crude sketch. A thin girl with a crooked nose, surrounded by snarling wolves. Wanted: Lala Martin crimes, murder, arson, witchcraft, conspiracy reward. 5 gold pieces, alive 10 gold pieces, dead. Dead is worth more, Brooke whispered, horror in her voice. He wants you dead. Luella's mind raced. If word had reached Millbrook already, it would have reached every town between here and the capital. They couldn't buy supplies without being recognized, couldn't show their faces without risking capture. Change of plans, she muttered, turning away from the stall. We're leaving. Without supplies? Tom asked. We'll have to forage, hunt, whatever it takes. Luella kept her head down, her hand drifting to the knife at her belt. Just walk slowly. Don't attract. You there, girl with the crooked nose. Luella's heart stopped. A guard was pushing through the crowd, his hand on his sword hilt. He was young, maybe 20, with the overeager expression of someone looking to make a name for himself. Don't suppose you've heard of Luella Martin? He called out. Because you look an awful lot like... Tom threw his cleaver. It wasn't a good throw. Tom was a butcher, not a soldier. The blade tumbled end over end and missed the guard by a foot, embedding itself in a nearby post. But it bought them a second. Luella bolted. Tom and Brooke were right behind her, racing through the market square as shouts erupted behind them. Stop them. The witch. The Martin girl. 10 gold pieces. Someone grab her. They burst out of the square and into a side street. Behind them, Luella could hear boots pounding on cobblestones, multiple sets now. The whole town was mobilizing. This way. Brooke veered left into an alley between two shops. They emerged into a residential area, small houses with gardens, laundry hanging on lines, a few startled chickens scattering at their approach. We'll never make it, Tom panted. There's too many of them. A howl split the air. Not from the woods outside town. From inside the town itself. The Alpha King burst around a corner at full sprint, 3 other wolves flanking it. They'd ignored Luella's orders and followed them in. Oh no, Luella breathed. No, no, no. But the wolves weren't attacking. They were herding. The Alpha King took point, leading them down a narrow passage between houses. The other wolves covered their retreat, snarling at anyone who tried to follow. They ran through gardens, over fences, across a small bridge. The wolves guided them with precision, choosing paths that humans would struggle to follow, routes that kept them away from main streets and gathering crowds. When they finally burst out of Millbrook's northern edge, the entire pack was waiting. So much for staying hidden, Shelia said dryly as Luella stumbled to a halt. But I'm glad you're alive. We need to move, Luella gasped, her lungs burning. They'll send riders. We have maybe an hour before. Before what? A new voice cut through her panic. Before you get yourselves killed through sheer incompetence? A man stepped out from behind a merchant's wagon. He was middle-aged, well-dressed in a way that suggested wealth without ostentation. His eyes were sharp, calculating, and he was smiling. Please don't panic, he said, raising his hands. I'm not here to turn you in. Quite the opposite, actually. Tom grabbed a fallen branch, holding it like a club. Who are you? My name is Mohammed Olsen. I'm a merchant silks, spices, occasionally information. Mohammed's smile widened. And I have a proposition for you, Miss Martin. How do you know my name? Luella demanded. The same way half the kingdom knows it by now, Lord Underwood's very thorough propaganda campaign. Mohammed gestured to his wagon. He's painted you as a murderous witch, a traitor, the architect of Black Pine's destruction. I know you didn't. Mohammed's expression turned serious. I was in Black Pine the week before the attack. I saw how Underwood operated. Saw how he squeezed the people for every copper while his manor grew larger. When I heard about the fire, I knew exactly who was responsible. Then help us, Shelia said desperately. Please, we're trying to reach the capital, to tell Prince Morgan the truth. Mohammed laughed, not unkindly but with genuine amusement. Oh, child. You think Prince Morgan doesn't know what Underwood is? The nobility protect their own. Even the good princes won't openly accuse a lord of murder without ironclad proof. Luella's hope, so fragile and new, began to crumble. But, Mohammed continued, there are other ways to fight. Ways that don't involve throwing yourselves at palace gates and hoping for mercy. What ways? Luella asked warily. Mohammed studied the wolves surrounding them, his eyes lingering on the Alpha King. You have something unique. Something unprecedented. An alliance with creatures that everyone fears and no one understands. That's power, Miss Martin. Real power. I'm not interested in power, Luella said. I just want justice. Justice requires power. Muhammad's voice was gentle but firm, Without it, you're just another corpse in Underwood's wake. But with it, with the right backing, the right strategy, you could be so much more. You still haven't explained what you want, Tom said, suspicion heavy in his voice. I want to help you, Muhammad said simply. I have resources, money, connections, safe houses between here and the capital. I can get you to Prince Morgan, not as refugees begging at the gates, but as petitioners with a case that can't be ignored. Why? Luella pressed. What do you get out of this? Muhammad's smile turned sharp. Underwood owes me money, a great deal of it. When his embezzling is exposed, his assets will be seized. I want to make sure I'm first in line for repayment. He paused. And I want to see him hang. Call it sentiment, call it business sense, call it whatever you like. Our interests align. Luella looked at the Alpha King. The wolf's amber eyes were unreadable. How do we know you're not leading us into a trap? Brooke asked. You don't, Muhammad admitted. But ask yourself, what do you have to lose? Without help, you'll be caught before you reach the capital. With my help, you have a chance. Maybe a slim one, but a chance nonetheless. He opened the back of his wagon, revealing supplies, food, blankets, clean clothes. I packed these this morning. I've been waiting for you. You knew we'd come through here? Luella asked. I know how refugees think. I know which routes avoid major roads while still heading northeast. And I know you're smart enough to need supplies eventually. Muhammad's expression softened. Let me help you, Miss Martin. Let me help all of you. Luella's instincts warred with her desperation. Everything Muhammad said made sense. But trust was a luxury she couldn't afford. The Alpha King moved forward and sniffed Muhammad's extended hand. For a long moment, wolf and man regarded each other. Then the Alpha King sat. Not aggressively. Not submissively. Just accepting. Your wolf approves, Muhammad noted. I'll take that as a good sign. Luella made her decision. What's your plan? Muhammad's smile returned, bright and conspiratorial. First, we get you all looking less like escaped criminals. Then we travel as my merchant caravan, perfectly legal, perfectly normal. The wolves stay hidden during day travel. Join us at night. In 3 days, we'll be in the capital with credentials that will get you through the palace gates. Credentials? Shelia asked. I supply silk to several noble houses. My deliveries come with automatic access to certain areas. Muhammad winked. Including the East Wing, where Prince Morgan keeps his menagerie of rescued animals. Despite everything, Luella felt hope stirring again. You've really thought this through. I'm a merchant, Miss Martin. Planning is what I do. Muhammad gestured to his wagon. Now, shall we stop wasting time and start moving? Millbrook's guards won't give up easily. And I'd rather not explain why I'm harboring fugitives. Over the next hour, they transformed. Muhammad produced clean clothes from his seemingly bottomless wagon, simple but respectable traveling gear that wouldn't draw attention. He had them wash their faces and hands, comb their hair, look like ordinary people again. The key to hiding, he explained, is not looking like you're hiding. Act normal, and people see what they expect to see. The wolves retreated into the forest paralleling the road, staying just out of sight but close enough to respond if needed. The Alpha King was the last to leave. Its eyes locked on Luella, until she nodded reassurance. By the time they set off, they looked like exactly what Muhammad claimed a merchant and his hired travelers, hauling goods to the capital for the winter season. You're good at this, Luella said quietly as they walked beside the wagon. I've had practice. Muhammad's expression darkened. I've seen what happens when people can't fight back against corrupt lords. Seen families destroyed, lives ruined, justice denied. Sometimes all they need is someone willing to level the playing field. You do this often? Tom asked. Help fugitives? When the fugitives are innocent and the lords are monsters? Yes. Muhammad glanced back at his wagon. Though I'll admit, this is my first time smuggling a witch and her wolf army. I'm not a witch, Luella said. I know. But stories are more powerful than truth, Miss Martin. Underwood's told a story about you. We need to tell a better one. As they traveled, Muhammad explained his plan in detail. They'd reach the capital in 3 days if they maintained a steady pace. Once there, he'd arrange for them to stay in a warehouse he owned in the merchant district, safe, secure, away from Underwood's spies. And then, Luella asked. Then we get you in front of Prince Morgan. I'll arrange a private delivery to his menagerie. You'll be carrying silk, but you'll also be carrying your story. The prince is eccentric. He values animals over most people. If you can demonstrate your bond with the wolves, if you can prove they chose to follow you rather than being enslaved, he'll listen. Shelia finished. Exactly, Muhammad nodded. It's not a guarantee, but it's better than anything you had before. That night, they made camp in a clearing well off the main road. The wolves returned at dusk, materializing from the forest like shadows given form. The Alpha King went directly to Luella, pressing its head against her chest in what she'd come to recognize as greeting. I missed you too, she murmured, running her fingers through its fur. Muhammad watched the interaction with fascination. Remarkable. I've seen trained dogs show less affection. They're not trained, Luella said. They're partners. Even more remarkable. Muhammad pulled out a notebook and began sketching. Do you mind if I document this? For the prince. Visual evidence of your bond could be compelling. Document away, Luella said, too tired to care. As Muhammad drew, Shelia sat beside Luella. Do you trust him? I don't know, Luella admitted. But the Alpha King does. And that's enough for now. The Alpha King, Shelia repeated. You really do talk about it like it's royalty. Luella looked at the great black wolf, at its intelligent amber eyes and regal bearing. Look at it. Tell me it's not. Shelia studied the wolf for a long moment. When this is over, when we've testified and Underwood is arrested, what happens to them? To the wolves? They go free, Luella said immediately. Back to the deep forest where they belong. And you? Luella hadn't thought that far ahead. Her entire focus had been on reaching the capital, on getting justice for Blackpine. What came after? I don't know, she said quietly. I don't have a home anymore. Don't have a place. You have us, Shelia said, gesturing to the refugees scattered around the camp. We're your place now. Your pack, I suppose. Luella smiled despite herself. A pack. I like that. The Alpha King made a sound that might have been agreement, and Luella laughed the first real laugh she'd had in days. Maybe Muhammad was right. Maybe stories were more powerful than truth. And if that was the case, Luella would make sure her story, their story, was one worth telling. Chapter 6. The Enemy at the Gates. The capital city of Thornhaven rose from the plains like a crown of stone and glass. Its walls stretched high enough to block out the sun, and its towers pierced the clouds. Luella had never seen anything like it, not in her dreams, not in her father's stories, not anywhere. 50,000 people live here, Muhammad said, watching her reaction with amusement. Maybe more. The census can't keep up with the influx from the countryside. It's overwhelming, Luella admitted, staring at the massive gates where guards checked every wagon, every traveler entering the city. That's the point, Muhammad replied. The capital is designed to make you feel small. Insignificant. It reminds you that the crown is powerful, and you are not. They'd made good time over the past 3 days. Muhammad's credentials had gotten them through 2 checkpoints without incident, and his merchant's papers had deflected the few questions they'd received. To any casual observer, they were exactly what they claimed to be, a trader and his hired help, bringing winter goods to the capital's wealthy elite. The wolves had shadowed them the entire way, staying in the forests and fields that bordered the roads. At night, they'd reunited at camp, and Luella had spent hours talking to the Alpha King, explaining the plan, hoping it understood. Now, approaching the capital's gates, she felt the full weight of what they were attempting. The wolves can't come in, Muhammad said quietly. The city guard shoots predators on sight, no exceptions. Luella had known this was coming, but it still felt like losing a limb. Where will they go? There's an old estate on the eastern edge of the city, Muhammad explained. Abandoned for years after its owner died without heirs. It has walls, a main house that's mostly intact, and enough land to keep 20 wolves hidden. I've used it before for sensitive storage. You've thought of everything, Tom said, impressed despite his earlier suspicions. I'm a merchant. Details are my business. Muhammad guided his wagon into the line of travelers waiting to enter the city. Miss Martin, you'll need to say goodbye now. Once we're through those gates, we can't risk contact with the wolves until we're ready for the prince. Luella's throat tightened. She dismounted from the wagon and walked back to where the pack waited in a grove of trees, just out of sight from the road. The Alpha King emerged immediately, its amber eyes finding hers across the distance. "I have to go into the city," Luella said, kneeling so she was eye level with the Great Wolf. "Without you, for a few days." The Alpha King's ears flattened. A low whine escaped its throat. "I know, I don't like it either." Luella pressed her forehead against the wolf's, breathing in its wild scent. "But Muhammad has a place for you. Safe. Hidden. You'll have food and shelter while I get us in front of the prince." She pulled back, looking into those intelligent eyes. "I need you to trust me, the way I trusted you when you pulled me from the lake." For a long moment, the Alpha King studied her. Then it touched its nose to her palm, the same gesture it had made after she'd saved the last wolf. The gesture that meant, "I see you. I choose you." "Thank you," Luella whispered. Muhammad approached carefully, keeping his distance from the pack. "Miss Martin, we need to move. The guards are getting curious about the delay." Luella stood, her hand trailing through the Alpha King's fur one last time. "Muhammad will lead you to the estate. It's east of here, maybe an hour's run. Wait for me there. I'll come as soon as I can." The Alpha King huffed, not agreement, but acknowledgement. It understood, even if it didn't like the plan. Muhammad produced a small leather bag from his coat. "Dried venison. Lead them with this if they're reluctant to follow." "They'll follow," Luella said, with more confidence than she felt. "They've trusted me this far." She climbed back onto the wagon, forcing herself not to look back as Muhammad urged the horses forward. But she felt the Alpha King's gaze on her back all the way to the gates, felt the invisible thread that connected them stretching thinner with each step. The gates themselves were a spectacle carved from black iron and decorated with the royal family's crest, a lion crowned with stars. Guards in polished armor flanked the entrance, checking papers and questioning travelers with professional boredom. "Papers," one demanded when their wagon reached the front of the line. Mohammed produced a leather folder thick with documents. "Mohammed Olson, licensed merchant. I have deliveries for House Cantrell, House Underwood." Luella's blood froze at the name, but Mohammed continued smoothly. "And a special order for Prince Morgan's menagerie. Silk bedding for his rescued falcon, I believe." The guard barely glanced at the papers. "House Underwood, you said? You heard what happened to their holdings in Blackpine?"
"Terrible business," Mohammed said, shaking his head.
"Raiders, I heard. Destroyed half the town."
"Worse than that," the guard said, lowering his voice conspiratorially. "There's a witch involved. Killed dozens with dark magic. Lord Underwood himself is in the city now, meeting with the High Council about organizing a proper hunt." Luella's hands clenched in her lap. Underwood was here. In the capital. Probably spinning his lies to anyone who would listen. A witch? Muhammad's performance was flawless, just the right amount of shock and fear. "Saints preserve us. Is the city safe?"
"Safe enough. The witch is still out in the countryside, or so they say. But Lord Underwood's offering a substantial reward." The guard waved them through.
"Keep your eyes open, merchant. Report anything suspicious."
"Of course, of course." Muhammad urged the horses forward, and they rolled through the massive gates into Thornhaven proper. The city swallowed them immediately. Streets teemed with people, nobles in fine clothes, merchants hawking wares, beggars pleading for coins, children darting between legs and hooves. The noise was overwhelming after days in the quiet forest, voices shouting, wheels clattering, bells ringing from a dozen different towers.
"Underwood's here," Luella said quietly, her voice barely audible over the chaos.
"He's already poisoning the well."
"I know," Muhammad replied, navigating through the traffic with practiced ease. "But it also means his attention is divided. He's focused on the High Council, on building his case. He won't expect us to move this quickly." They wound through the merchant district, a maze of warehouses and shops where goods from across the kingdom changed hands. Muhammad's warehouse sat near the eastern wall, unassuming and unremarkable among dozens of similar buildings. Inside, it was larger than it appeared. The main floor held legitimate inventory: bolts of silk, crates of spices, barrels of wine, but Muhammad led them up a narrow staircase to a second floor that had been converted into living quarters. "It's not luxurious," he said, gesturing to the simple beds and small kitchen. But it's safe. My employees know to ignore this floor. You can stay here without being seen. It's perfect, Shelia said, dropping her pack with obvious relief. Walls. A roof. Actual beds. I'd forgotten what those were like. The other refugees murmured agreement, exploring their temporary shelter with the wonder of people who'd been sleeping on frozen ground for days. Mohammed pulled Luella aside. I need to make my legitimate deliveries today. Maintain my cover. Tomorrow morning, I'll send word to Prince Morgan's assistant about the silk for his menagerie. With luck, we'll have an appointment by evening. And if we don't, Luella asked, then we get creative. Mohammed's smile was grim. But let's try the legitimate route first. The prince is eccentric, but he's not stupid. If we can present your case properly, with evidence and witnesses, he'll listen. Evidence, Luella repeated. We have survivors from Blackpine. We have testimonies about what Underwood did, but it's our word against a lord's, which is why we need the wolves. Mohammed pulled out his sketchbook, showing Luella the drawings he'd made over the past few days. This bond you share with them, it's unprecedented. If you can demonstrate it to the prince, if you can show him that these creatures chose to follow you, that they're not enslaved or controlled but willing allies, he'll see that Underwood's story doesn't make sense, Luella finished. A witch wouldn't need willing allies. She'd use force, coercion. Exactly, Mohammed nodded approvingly. We're not just defending you from Underwood's accusations, we're building a counter-narrative, one that makes you a hero rather than a villain. I'm not a hero, Luella said. I'm just someone who couldn't stand by and watch innocent creatures drown. That's precisely what makes you a hero, Miss Martin. Mohammed's expression was serious now, all traces of his merchant's charm gone. Most people can. Most people do. They watch injustice happen and tell themselves it's not their problem. You didn't. And that's rare enough to be extraordinary. After Mohammed left to make his deliveries, Luella stood at the warehouse's single window, staring out at the capital's sprawling chaos. Somewhere in this city, Underwood was telling his lies. Somewhere, nobles were nodding and agreeing that she was dangerous, that she needed to be stopped. Thinking about the wolves? Shelia asked, coming to stand beside her. Thinking about everything, Luella admitted. A week ago, I was nobody. A poacher's daughter living in a shack at the edge of the world. Now I'm here, about to accuse one of the most powerful men in the kingdom of mass murder. Terrifying, isn't it? Shelia's voice was soft. But also, liberating? For the first time in my life, I'm doing something that matters. Not just surviving, but actually fighting for something. Luella glanced at her stepsister. Shelia's fine dress was long gone, replaced with practical traveling clothes. Her perfect blonde curls were tied back in a simple braid. She looked less like the pampered merchant's daughter and more like someone who'd discovered her own strength. You've changed, Luella observed. So have you, Shelia smiled. You're not hiding anymore, not making yourself small so people will ignore you. I was never good at hiding anyway, Luella said wryly. Crooked nose. Remember? That nose saved us, Shelia said. The guard at the gate was looking for a witch. A monster. He saw a plain girl with a broken nose and dismissed you completely. Luella touched the bump on her nose, the permanent reminder of Shelia's cruelty years ago. Funny how something that had caused her so much shame might have just saved their lives. I'm still sorry, Shelia said quietly. About the door. About everything. I know. Luella turned from the window. And you're proving it. That's what matters. The rest of the day passed in tense waiting. Tom kept watch at the window, looking for any sign they'd been followed. Annette organized their meager supplies, rationing what little food remained. The children played quietly, sensing the adults' tension even if they didn't fully understand it. As evening fell, Luella slipped out of the warehouse. Mohammed had given her directions to the abandoned estate where the wolves were hiding. It was risky, the streets were still crowded, and guards patrolled regularly, but she needed to see them, needed to know they were safe. The estate sat on the edge of the city's eastern quarter, surrounded by a high stone wall that had seen better days. Luella found a section where the stones had crumbled enough to climb over and drop down into an overgrown garden on the other side. The main house loomed ahead, its windows dark and empty. But Luella could sense them, the wolves, watching from the shadows. "It's me," she called softly. The Alpha King emerged from behind a collapsed fountain, and Luella's heart sang with relief. The great wolf crossed the garden in long strides and pressed against her, nearly knocking her over with the force of its greeting. "I missed you too," Luella laughed, burying her face in its fur. "I'm sorry I left. I'm sorry I..." The Alpha King silenced her with a gentle bump of its nose. Then it did something unexpected. It led her toward the house, looking back to make sure she followed. Inside, the other wolves had made themselves comfortable in what must have once been a grand ballroom. Moonlight streamed through broken windows, illuminating marble floors and the remains of elegant fixtures. The pack had arranged themselves in a loose circle, and in the center, puppies, Luella breathed. Three of the female wolves had been pregnant. She'd known that, had seen the subtle changes in their bodies over the days of travel. But she hadn't expected this. Seven tiny wolf pups, barely a week old, nursed from their mothers or stumbled on uncertain legs across the marble floor. "Oh," Luella whispered, kneeling carefully so as not to startle them. "Oh, they're beautiful." The Alpha King watched her reaction with what might have been pride. These weren't just allies now. They were family. Three generations bound together by survival and choice. One of the pups, braver or more curious than the others, wobbled toward Luella. It sniffed her hand with a nose smaller than her thumb, then made a tiny sound that was probably meant to be fierce but came out adorable instead. "Hello, little one," Luella murmured, gently stroking its downy fur. "Welcome to the world. I promise we're going to make it a better place for you." The Alpha King settled beside her, and together they watched the pups play and nurse and discover their new home. In that moment, surrounded by life and hope, Luella felt something settle in her chest. This was why she'd pulled them from the freezing water. Not for revenge against Underwood. Not for justice. Though that mattered too. But for this, for the future. For the next generation that deserved to grow up in a world where power didn't automatically mean cruelty. Where the strong protected the weak instead of exploiting them. "Tomorrow," she told the Alpha King, "we go before the prince. We tell our story. And we pray he's the kind of man who values life over politics." The Alpha King huffed, not quite agreement, not quite skepticism. Just acknowledgement that tomorrow would come, whether they were ready or not. Luella stayed until moonrise, memorizing the sight of the pups and their mothers, of the pack at rest in this temporary sanctuary. Then she climbed back over the wall and made her way through darkened streets to the warehouse. Mohammed was waiting when she returned. "We have our appointment," he said without preamble. "Tomorrow afternoon, the prince will see us in his private menagerie." "That's good news," Luella said. "Yes and no." Mohammed's expression was troubled. "I also learned something troubling from my contacts. Lord Underwood has requested an audience with the High Council tomorrow morning. He's bringing evidence of your crimes." "What kind of evidence?" "Witnesses from Blackpine who'll testify you led the raiders. Records showing your family's criminal history. A dossier prepared by his lawyers." Mohammed's jaw tightened. "He's building a legal case to have you declared an outlaw. Once that happens, anyone can kill you without consequence." Luella's stomach dropped. "How long do we have?" "The council meets at dawn. They could issue the decree by noon." Mohammed looked at her steadily. "Which means, we need Prince Morgan to intervene before that happens. If the decree is issued first, even the prince can't easily overturn it without looking like he's defying the entire council." "So everything depends on tomorrow afternoon," Luella said. "Everything," Mohammed confirmed. "No pressure." Luella laughed, despite herself, a slightly hysterical sound that made Mohammed smile. "Get some rest," he advised. "Tomorrow we change the story. Tomorrow we show them who Luella Martin really is." Luella nodded, but she knew sleep would be impossible. Too much was riding on the next day. Too many lives, human and wolf, hanging in the balance. She lay in her borrowed bed, staring at the ceiling, and thought about the Alpha King, about the bond they'd forged in freezing water and fire and desperate flight, about the pups who deserved to grow up free, and about the plain girl with a crooked nose who'd somehow become the center of a war she'd never wanted to fight. Tomorrow would decide everything. Tomorrow, the story would finally be told. Chapter 7, The Prince's Menagerie. Dawn came too quickly and too slowly at the same time. Luella had managed perhaps 2 hours of fitful sleep, haunted by dreams of drowning wolves and burning villages. When Muhammad knocked on her door, she was already dressed, her father's knife secure at her belt. "The council convenes in an hour," he said grimly. "Underwood will present his case. By midday, you could be declared an outlaw. Then we'd better make our case count." Luella's voice was steadier than she felt. "Is everything ready?" "As ready as it can be." Muhammad handed her a package wrapped in fine paper. "Your costume for today. We need you looking respectable, like someone who could stand before a prince." Inside was a dress. Not elaborate or expensive, but well-made and clean. Deep forest green with simple embroidery at the collar and cuffs. It was the nicest thing Luella had worn in 6 years. "I can't accept this," she started. "You already have. Now put it on." Muhammad's tone brooked no argument. "First impressions matter, Miss Martin. Especially when you're fighting for your life." Shelia helped her dress, plaiting her hair into a neat braid, and even producing a small jar of salve to treat the worst of the cuts and bruises on Luella's face. "There," Shelia said, stepping back to examine her work. "You look almost noble." "I look like I'm playing dress-up," Luella muttered, tugging at the unfamiliar fabric. "You look like someone worth listening to," Tom corrected. He'd cleaned up too, his butcher's apron replaced with a simple but respectable coat. "Like someone who matters." By the time they left the warehouse, the sun was climbing toward noon. The streets were crowded with merchants and nobles, all conducting their daily business while oblivious to the fact that Luella's entire future hung in the balance. They made their way to the palace district, an area of wide boulevards and manicured gardens where the kingdom's power resided. The palace itself was a sprawling complex of white stone and glass, with towers that scraped the sky and walls that had stood for 500 years. Guards flanked every entrance, but Muhammad's credentials got them through without issue. He'd been here before, had established relationships with the staff. They nodded respectfully as he passed, leading Luella and a small delegation through marble corridors hung with priceless tapestries. "Prince Morgan's menagerie is on the eastern grounds," Muhammad explained quietly. "It's his sanctuary, the place he goes when court politics become too much. He's saved dozens of animals over the years. Hawks with broken wings, horses bound for slaughter, even a bear cub whose mother was killed by hunters." "He sounds like a good man," Luella said. "He's an idealist in a world of pragmatists," Muhammad replied. "Which makes him either the best person or the worst person to appeal to. I honestly don't know which." They emerged from the palace into an enclosed garden that seemed to exist in defiance of the season. Somehow, despite the winter cold, flowers still bloomed here. Trees bore fruit. Birds sang from branches that should have been bare. "Magic?" Luella whispered. "Money," Muhammad corrected. "Enough money to pay mages to maintain growth spells year-round. The prince believes his rescued animals deserve beauty." At the garden's heart stood a series of elaborate enclosures, each one designed to mimic a natural habitat. Luella saw hawks in an aviary that stretched 3 stories high, deer grazing in a meadow that shouldn't exist within city walls, and in the largest enclosure, a magnificent black bear lounging in artificial sunlight. "He's early," Muhammad muttered. A figure stood by the bear's enclosure, his back to them. He was tall and lean, dressed in fine but practical clothes that suggested someone who valued function over fashion. His hair was dark, tied back in a simple queue. And when he turned, Luella's breath caught. Prince Morgan was younger than she'd expected, maybe 30, with angular features and eyes that held more weariness than any 30-year-old should possess. But what struck her most was the way he looked at the bear. Not with the detached curiosity of a collector, but with genuine affection. "Muhammad," the prince said, his voice carrying the refined accent of court but warmed by genuine pleasure. "You're punctual as always, Your Highness." Muhammad bowed deeply. "I've brought the silk bedding you requested, along with a young woman who's been accused of burning down a village, consorting with demons, and practicing dark magic." Prince Morgan's gaze shifted to Luella. "Yes, I know. Lord Underwood spent 3 hours this morning explaining in excruciating detail why you should be hunted down and executed." Luella's heart sank. They were too late. Underwood had already, which is precisely why I agreed to see you, the prince continued. Underwood is many things, but subtle isn't one of them. When a man spends 3 hours insisting someone is evil, I generally assume he's trying very hard to hide his own sins. Hope flickered back to life in Luella's chest. Your Highness, she said, dropping into a curtsy that Shelia had hastily taught her that morning. Thank you for seeing us. Don't thank me yet. Prince Morgan gestured to a nearby bench. Sit. Tell me your story. The real story, not the propaganda Underwood is spreading. So Luella told him everything, the wolves drowning in Blackpine Lake, her decision to save them, Underwood's role in setting the trap, the raiders who burned the village on his orders, the flight through the Thornwood, all of it. Prince Morgan listened without interrupting, his expression impossible to read. When she finished, silence stretched between them. A remarkable tale, he said finally. But tales are just words. Underwood has words too. He has witnesses who will swear you led the raiders. He has documentation of your family's criminal history. He has a very compelling narrative about a bitter young woman seeking revenge. It's all lies, Luella said desperately. He's covering up his own crimes. I know. The prince's interruption was gentle but firm. I know. Underwood is lying. I've known for years that he's been embezzling from his tax collections. I've known he's cruel and petty and willing to hurt innocents to protect his interests. Then why? Shelia started. Because knowing and proving are different things. Prince Morgan's weariness was more apparent now. I'm the youngest prince. Fourth in line for the throne. I have some influence, yes, but not enough to directly challenge a powerful lord without ironclad evidence. We have survivors, Tom said. People who saw. People whose word Underwood will discredit. He's a lord. They're commoners. The High Council will believe him over them. The prince stood and paced to the bear's enclosure. Unless we have something Underwood can't explain away. Something that breaks his narrative so completely that even the council has to listen. The wolves, Luella said quietly. Prince Morgan turned, and for the first time, she saw real interest in his eyes. Yes. Muhammad's letters mentioned you'd formed some kind of bond with them, that they chose to follow you. Is that true? It's true, Luella confirmed. They saved my life. Multiple times. Not because I control them, but because we, she searched for the right word, recognize each other. They understand what I am. I understand what they are. Can you prove it? The prince's intensity was startling. Can you demonstrate this bond in a way that's undeniable? Yes, Luella said, more confidently than she felt. But they're not here. They're at an abandoned estate on the eastern edge of the city. Then we bring them here. Prince Morgan's decision was immediate. To the menagerie. Today. Now. Your Highness, Muhammad said carefully. Bringing 20 wolves into the palace grounds might cause concern. Let it. Prince Morgan's smile was sharp. I'm calling an emergency session of the High Council for this evening. Every lord, every advisor, everyone who listened to Underwood's lies this morning, they'll convene here, in my menagerie, to witness Miss Martin's demonstration. And if it goes wrong? Luella asked. If the wolves are frightened by the crowd? If something startles them and they attack? Then Underwood wins, and we all die looking foolish. The prince's expression softened. But I don't think that's what will happen. Mohammed's sketches show a genuine bond. Your story rings true in a way Underwood's doesn't. And, he glanced at his rescued animals, I've spent my entire life learning to read creatures who can't speak for themselves. I believe them more than I believe politicians. Over the next hour, preparations were made with startling efficiency. Prince Morgan sent runners to every member of the High Council with mandatory summons. Muhammad dispatched trusted servants to retrieve the wolves from the abandoned estate. Palace guards were positioned around the menagerie not to threaten, the prince insisted, but to prevent panic if the demonstration went poorly. We're really doing this, Shelia murmured, watching servants construct a viewing area for the nobles. We're going to parade wolves in front of the most powerful people in the kingdom. We're going to show them the truth, Luella corrected, but her palms were sweating. Everything depended on the Alpha King, on the bond they'd formed in freezing water and desperate flight. If the wolf didn't respond to her in front of the council, if it seemed wild or dangerous or controlled, Underwood would use it as proof of witchcraft. But if it worked, If the Alpha King showed the Council what true partnership looked like, they might have a chance. The sun was beginning its descent toward the horizon when Muhammad returned with the wolves. He'd brought them through the service entrances, avoiding the main courtyards where their presence would cause immediate panic. "They're in the staging area," he reported to Prince Morgan. "And Your Highness, there's something you should know. Three of the females have given birth. There are pups." The prince's eyes widened. "Pups? How young?" "Very young. Less than 2 weeks old." "Bring them," Prince Morgan said immediately. "All of them. The pups too. If anything will demonstrate that these wolves trust Miss Martin, it's allowing her near their young." The council began arriving as dusk fell. Lord Philip Underwood was among the first, his face darkening when he saw Luella standing beside Prince Morgan. "This is outrageous," Underwood said, his voice carrying across the garden. "Your Highness, that woman is a criminal. She should be in chains, not standing at your side like an honored guest." "She's standing at my side because I invited her, Lord Underwood." Prince Morgan's tone was pleasant but carried an edge of steel. "Just as I invited you, we're going to settle this matter tonight, once and for all." More nobles arrived. Some Luella recognized from Underwood's hunting party. Others were strangers, men and women in elaborate clothing, who regarded her with expressions ranging from curiosity to contempt. When the High Counselor himself arrived, an elderly man whose name was Nicholas Duran, the murmuring crowd fell silent. "Your Highness," Counselor Duran said, his voice dry and precise. "Your summons indicated a matter of urgent importance regarding false accusations and the true nature of animal cognition. I confess myself curious." "Then let me satisfy that curiosity," Prince Morgan gestured to Luella. "Lord Underwood has accused Miss Martin of witchcraft, claiming she uses dark magic to control wolves and commit murder. Miss Martin claims the wolves follow her of their own free will, that they recognize her as an ally rather than a master. Tonight, we determine who's telling the truth." "How?" Underwood demanded. "By taking her word for it. By observation." Prince Morgan nodded to Muhammad. The merchant opened the gates to the staging area. 20 wolves flowed into the menagerie like liquid shadow. Their presence transformed the garden. Suddenly, the carefully manicured space felt wild, ancient, touched by something that predated civilization itself. The nobles gasped. Several stepped back. Two of the women screamed. The Alpha King entered last, three of the females close behind carrying pups gently in their jaws. Every wolf's eyes found Luella immediately. "Miss Martin," Prince Morgan said quietly. "Show us." Luella stepped forward. Her legs felt like water, but she forced herself to walk steadily toward the pack. Behind her, she could hear the nobles' shocked whispers. Underwood's angry muttering. The rustling of weapons as guards readied themselves for violence. She stopped 10 feet from the Alpha King. The great black wolf watched her with those impossible amber eyes. "Hello," Luella said softly. "I'm sorry I brought you here. Sorry I'm asking this of you. But I need them to understand what you are. What we are." The Alpha King tilted its head, considering. Then it walked forward, closing the distance between them, and pressed its forehead against hers. The gesture was so gentle, so deliberately tender, that several nobles gasped. That's impossible," someone whispered. "Wild wolves aren't wild," Luella said, loud enough for everyone to hear. She kept her eyes on the Alpha King, her hand resting on its neck. "They're free. There's a difference. Wild implies no choice, no thought, just instinct. These wolves choose. They think, they understand." She knelt, and the Alpha King knelt with her. "If I controlled them," Luella continued, "they'd have no will of their own. They'd be slaves. But look," the three females with pups approached. One placed her pup directly at Luella's feet, an act of trust so profound that Prince Morgan inhaled sharply. "Wolves don't let strangers near their young," the prince said. Not unless they trust completely," Luella finished. She picked up the pup with infinite care. It squirmed in her hands, making tiny sounds, utterly unafraid. "This isn't control. This is family." The nobles were silent now, watching with expressions that ranged from wonder to disbelief. Lord Underwood's face was purple with rage. "This proves nothing. She's bewitched them. Use some kind of—" "Lord Underwood," Counselor Duran's voice cut through the shouting. I would like to try something. Miss Martin, would you permit it? Luella nodded, not trusting her voice. The elderly counselor approached slowly, his movements careful. The Alpha King's hackles rose slightly, but Luella placed a calming hand on its head. I mean no harm, Counselor Duran said to the wolf. I simply wish to understand. He extended his hand, palm up, the way Luella had once extended hers over freezing water. The Alpha King sniffed his hand, studied the old man with those intelligent eyes. Then, deliberately, it touched its nose to the counselor's palm. Extraordinary, Duran breathed. Your Highness, in 40 years of governance, I have never he looked at Luella. How? I saved their lives, Luella said simply. And they saved mine. Everything else followed from that. A convenient story, Underwood snarled. But it doesn't change the facts. She led raiders to Blackpine. She helped them burn. The raiders you hired. Shelia spoke up, stepping forward. The raiders who admitted you'd ordered the attack to destroy tax records proving your embezzlement. Underwood's face went from purple to white. That's you have no proof. We have 17 survivors who will testify, Tom added. We have the raiders' own words. And we have the fact that your estate was the only building left untouched in the attack. Circumstantial. All of it. Underwood looked desperately at the council. She's lying. They're all lying to protect themselves. Perhaps, Counselor Duran said thoughtfully. But Miss Martin's wolves are not lying. They cannot lie. And their behavior tells a story that contradicts yours, Lord Underwood. He turned to address the assembled nobles. A witch who controls animals would create slaves, creatures with dead eyes and mechanical movements. These wolves are neither dead-eyed nor mechanical. They are alert, intelligent, and acting of their own free will. Furthermore, Prince Morgan added, Lord Underwood claimed Miss Martin murdered dozens in Blackpine. Yet here she stands, having traveled for days with refugees and wolves, and not a single additional death has occurred. If she were truly the murderous witch Underwood describes, wouldn't there be bodies? The tide was turning. Luella could see it in the nobles' faces, in the way they looked at Underwood with new suspicion. I move, Counselor Duran said formally, that all charges against Luella Martin be dismissed, pending a full investigation into Lord Underwood's role in the Blackpine incident. Seconded, another counselor said immediately. All in favor? A forest of hands rose. Opposed? Only Underwood's hand went up. The motion carries. Counselor Duran turned to Underwood. Lord Underwood, you are hereby ordered to surrender all financial records pertaining to Blackpine for immediate audit. You will remain in the capital pending the results of said audit. Any attempt to flee will be considered an admission of guilt. Underwood's mouth opened and closed. For a moment, he looked like a fish drowning in air. Then his hand dropped to his sword. If you won't listen to reason, he said, his voice shaking with rage, then I'll settle this the old way. Trial by combat. I challenge Miss Martin to. The Alpha King snarled. It wasn't a warning snarl, it was a promise. The sound carried centuries of predator instinct, of pack law, of nature's own form of justice. Underwood stumbled backward, his sword half drawn, his face stark with fear. On second thought, he whispered, I accept the council's judgment. Wise choice, Prince Morgan said dryly. As guards escorted a trembling Underwood away, the nobles began to disperse, their conversations a buzz of speculation and scandal. This would be the talk of the capital for months, but Luella barely heard them. She was surrounded by wolves, by the pack that had chosen her and kept choosing her. The pups were being returned to their mothers. The Alpha King stood at her side, solid and warm and real. Miss Martin, Prince Morgan approached, and this time his smile was genuine. It seems you've accomplished the impossible. You've made the High Council side with a commoner against a lord. I just told the truth, Luella said. The wolves did the rest. The wolves? Prince Morgan repeated, looking at the pack with undisguised wonder. What will you do now? You're free, vindicated. You could stay in the capital. Accept a position in my menagerie. Help me understand these incredible creatures. No, Luella said gently. Thank you, Your Highness. But that's not what they need. What we need. She looked at the Alpha King. We're going back to the forest. Back to where we belong. far from lords and politics and people who see animals as tools instead of partners. I understand, the prince said quietly. And perhaps that's best. The world has much to learn before it's ready for what you've proven tonight. Mohammed approached with Shelia and the other refugees. What about them? He asked. What about the people who followed you here? Luella looked at her unlikely family, the stepsister who'd become a friend, the butcher who'd thrown a cleaver to buy her time, the mothers who'd trusted her with their children, the people who'd believed in her when no one else would. That's up to them, she said. Anyone who wants to come with us is welcome. Anyone who wants to stay and rebuild Blackpine. I'm sure Prince Morgan can arrange assistance. I've already made arrangements, the prince confirmed. Funds for reconstruction. Proper oversight to prevent future. Underwoods. Blackpine will rise again, but it won't be the same, Annette said quietly. Too much has been lost. Then we build something new, Tom said. Something better. Shelia stepped forward. I want to come with you. Into the forest. With the wolves. Luella blinked. Shelia, I'm not a forest person, Shelia finished. I know, but I'm not a city person anymore either. I don't know what I am now, but I'd like to find out, with you, if you'll have me. Luella looked at her stepsister, really looked at her, and saw not the cruel girl who'd broken her nose, but the woman who'd followed her through fire and frozen forests, who'd changed, who'd grown. I'd like that, Luella said. One by one, the others made their choices. Some would stay. Help rebuild Blackpine under Prince Morgan's protection. Others, Tom, Brooke, two of the families would come into the forest, start fresh somewhere new. As the moon rose over the capital, Luella and her chosen family prepared to leave. The wolves were eager to go, sensing the wild lands beyond the city walls. One last thing, Prince Morgan said, pressing a leather pouch into Luella's hands. Supplies, money, consider it a royal gift. We can't accept. You saved 20 wolves from drowning, the prince said. You exposed corruption. You gave the High Council no choice but to do the right thing. I'd say you've earned it. Luella opened the pouch and found enough gold to feed them for a year. Thank you, Your Highness. Thank you, Miss Martin. You've reminded me why I started rescuing animals in the first place. Sometimes the only way to survive a cruel world is to be kind anyway. They left Thornhaven as silently as they'd entered, slipping through the eastern gates just before midnight. The wolves ranged around them, the Alpha King at Luella's side as always. Behind them, the capital glittered with a thousand lights, beautiful and terrible, and full of people who would never understand what had happened here tonight. Ahead lay the forest. The deep, wild places where lords had no power, and the only law was the law of the pack. Luella had pulled 20 wolves from freezing water. The last one had been the Alpha King. And now finally they were all free. Chapter 8. The Pack's Home. Spring came to the Thornwood like a whispered promise. 3 months had passed since Luella led her unlikely family out of Thornhaven's gates. 3 months of learning to live in ways that had nothing to do with surviving cruelty and everything to do with building something new. The settlement they'd created sat deep in the forest, far beyond the reach of lords and laws. It was small. 7 cabins built from timber the wolves had helped them fell, arranged in a loose circle around a central fire pit. Not grand. Not permanent. But theirs. Luella stood at the edge of the clearing, watching the morning sun filter through branches that were finally showing new growth. Behind her, she could hear Tom sharpening tools, Brooke hanging laundry, children laughing as they played with the wolf pups who'd grown bold and curious in these safe woods. The Alpha King approached silently, as it always did, and pressed against her side. The gesture had become ritual, a morning greeting that said, I see you, I choose you without words. Good morning, Luella murmured, running her fingers through fur that had thickened with the better food and safety of these past months. Did you sleep well? The wolf huffed amusement, she'd learned. As if sleep were something wolves did, rather than the state they occupied between hunts and watchfulness. Lou, Shelia's voice called from one of the cabins. The trapline caught something. Want to help me dress it? Coming, Luella called back. The Alpha King followed her across the clearing, where Shelia waited with a fat rabbit and a knowing smile. Her stepsister had transformed in the forest, her soft hands had grown calloused, her pale skin had tanned and freckled, and she moved with a confidence that city life had never given her. You're getting good at this, Luella said, examining Shelia's neat work on the trapline. I had a good teacher. Shelia began preparing the rabbit with quick, efficient movements. Though I have to admit, I never thought I'd be grateful for all those etiquette lessons Mother made me take. Turns out, dressing a rabbit requires the same precision as arranging flowers. Luella laughed. It still surprised her sometimes. How easily laughter came now. How the weight she'd carried for 6 years, the shame, the anger, the constant vigilance had slowly dissolved in the forest's embrace. Mohammed sent word yesterday, Shelia continued. Through his courier network. Underwood's trial is next week. Luella's hands stilled on the rabbit. And? The evidence is overwhelming. Financial records showing years of embezzlement, testimony from the raiders he hired. They turned on him once they realized he wasn't going to pay them. Even some of his own servants have come forward. Shelia's voice hardened. He's going to hang. Good, Luella said simply. She'd thought she might feel something more: triumph, vindication, the savage joy of seeing an enemy destroyed. But there was only a quiet satisfaction that justice, however delayed, was finally arriving. Mohammed also said Prince Morgan has been asking about us, Shelia added. Wondering if we're well, if we need anything. Tell him we're fine, Luella said. Better than fine. Tell him we're home. The morning passed in the rhythms they'd established, checking traps, tending the garden they'd started, preparing food, maintaining their small settlement. The wolves ranged through the surrounding forest, hunting their own prey but always returning to the clearing by nightfall. It was a life that would have seemed impossible 6 months ago. A life where humans and wolves lived not as master and servant, not as enemies, but as neighbors who'd chosen to share space and resources. Around midday, one of the scout wolves returned with news. Luella had learned to read their body language well enough to understand the basics. There were strangers approaching from the south. Humans. Not threatening, but present. Company, Luella announced to the others. Tom, Brooke, stay alert but don't show weapons unless I signal. They gathered near the fire pit, the wolves forming a loose perimeter. Luella positioned herself at the clearing's edge, the Alpha King at her side, and waited. Three figures emerged from the trees. Refugees, by the look of them thin, tired, carrying everything they owned in packs that sagged with meager possessions. A man, a woman, and a boy who couldn't have been more than 12. The man stopped when he saw the wolves, his hand instinctively moving to protect his family. It's all right, Luella called out. They won't hurt you. Not unless you mean harm. We heard stories, the woman said, her voice hoarse. About a place in the deep forest where people lived with wolves, where there was no lord, no taxes. No, her voice broke. No cruelty. We didn't believe it, the man added. Thought it was just a fairy tale. But we had nowhere else to go. Our village Lord Cantrell increased the taxes again. We couldn't pay. They took our farm. Said we could work it as tenants, but tenants are just slaves with different names, Luella finished. She'd heard similar stories from the other refugees who'd trickled into their settlement over the past months. People fleeing the same system that had destroyed her father. You're welcome here. We don't have much, but we share what we have. The family's relief was palpable. The boy stared at the wolves with wide eyes, fear mixing with wonder. They're really safe? He asked. As safe as anything wild can be, Luella said honestly. They're not pets. They're not tame. But they've chosen to live alongside us. Chosen to protect us. If you respect them, they'll respect you. One of the female wolves, the one whose pup Luella had held before the council, approached the boy slowly. She sniffed his hand, then gently bumped her head against his palm. The boy's face transformed with joy. See? Luella smiled. She approves. By evening, the new family had been integrated into the settlement. Tom was showing the man how to build a proper shelter. Annette was feeding them hot soup. The children were playing together, wolves and humans tumbling in the new grass like it was the most natural thing in the world. Luella sat by the fire pit, watching her community grow, and felt something she'd never quite experienced before. Peace. Not the absence of conflict. There were still challenges, still difficulties, still moments of hunger and fear and uncertainty. But underneath it all was a foundation of safety, of belonging, of knowing that tomorrow wouldn't bring fresh cruelty from people who saw her as less than human. You're thinking loud thoughts, Shelia said. settling beside her with two cups of herb tea, just reflecting. Luella accepted the cup gratefully. 6 months ago, I was nobody. A poacher's daughter living in a shack, surviving on stale bread and stubbornness. And now you're the founder of a settlement that's become a refuge for people escaping tyranny. Shalia sipped her tea. Plus, you're the only person in recorded history to form a working alliance with wild wolves. I'd say that's quite the transformation. I didn't plan any of this, Luella protested. I just pulled some wolves from freezing water because it was the right thing to do. That's what makes it remarkable. Shelia's expression turned serious. Most people wouldn't have. Most people would have walked away, told themselves it wasn't their problem, but you didn't. And because you didn't, 17 people survived Black Pine. 20 wolves lived to have pups, and now, people who have nowhere else to go have a home. The Alpha King chose that moment to return from its evening patrol, 3 younger wolves following in its wake. The Great Black Wolf had become, if possible, even more magnificent over the past months. Well-fed, well-rested, free to roam its ancestral forests, it radiated health and power. It crossed directly to Luella and laid a freshly killed deer at her feet. For the pack, Luella said, understanding the gesture. Thank you. The Alpha King's amber eyes gleamed in the firelight. Then it did something it had never done before. It howled. Not a warning howl. Not a hunting call. Something else entirely. One by one, the other wolves joined in. 20 voices, no. More now, the pups adding their own tentative sounds, creating a harmony that made Luella's skin prickle with something beyond words. What are they saying? The new boy asked, his eyes wide. Luella listened, felt the sound resonate in her chest, and understood. They're saying we're home, she said softly. This is home. This is pack. The howling continued, rising and falling like music, like prayer, like the sound the world made before humans tried to tame it. And slowly, tentatively, the humans began to join in. It started with the children, their voices high and uncertain. Then Tom added his rough baritone, Brooke's clear alto. Shelley's slightly off-key soprano. One by one, every human in the settlement lifted their voice to blend with the wolves. It should have sounded absurd, humans trying to howl. But somehow, in that moment, it was perfect. It was a declaration. A claim. A promise. We are pack. We are family. We choose this. We choose each other. When the howling finally faded, leaving only echoes and the crackle of the fire, Luella found she was crying, not from sadness. From something too big to name gratitude, maybe. Or relief. Or the simple, overwhelming fact of surviving everything that had tried to break her. Your father would be proud, Shelia said quietly. I think he would, Luella agreed. He always said the forest provided everything you needed. I just didn't understand he meant more than food and shelter. He meant community. Purpose. Freedom. The Alpha King pressed against her side, and Luella buried her face in its fur. Thank you, she whispered. For trusting me. For teaching me what it means to be part of something larger than myself. The wolf's response was a gentle huff that might have meant you're welcome, or might have meant foolish human, you taught us the same thing. Probably both. The weeks that followed brought more changes. More refugees arrived. Word of the forest settlement was spreading through the underground networks of people fleeing oppression. Each family was evaluated carefully. Those who came seeking only to escape work were turned away. Those who came seeking a chance to build something better were welcomed. The settlement grew to 20 cabins, then 30. They started calling it Wolf Haven, though no one could quite remember who suggested the name first. Mohammed visited in early summer, bringing news from the capital. Underwood had been hanged for his crimes. His estate had been seized, his wealth distributed among Black Pine's survivors. Prince Morgan had personally overseen the village's reconstruction, ensuring that it would never again be subject to a single lord's tyranny. The prince sends his regards, Mohammed said, sharing tea with Luella beside the fire pit, and he asked me to give you this. He produced a small wooden box, carved with intricate designs of wolves and forests. Inside was a letter, written in Prince Morgan's own hand. Dear Miss Martin, I hope this letter finds you well and prospering in your forest home. Word of Wolfhaven has reached the capital, stories of a place where humans and wolves live in harmony, where refugees find safety, where a new kind of community is being built. I wanted you to know that your actions have had consequences far beyond what you might imagine. Three other lords have been investigated for crimes similar to Underwood's. Two have been convicted. The High Council has implemented new oversight measures for tax collection and land management. You pulled 20 wolves from freezing water. In doing so, you've pulled an entire kingdom toward justice. Should you ever need anything, resources, protection, or simply someone who understands what you've accomplished, know that you have a friend in the palace. With deep respect and admiration, Prince Morgan. Luella read the letter twice, then carefully folded it and placed it back in the box. "He's a good man," she said. "He is," Mohammed agreed, "which is rare among the nobility. Perhaps your example will inspire more to follow his lead." "Perhaps." Luella watched the wolf pups playing in the clearing. They were nearly full grown now, beautiful and wild and free. "Or perhaps some things will never change. But at least here, in this small corner of the forest, we've proven it's possible to live differently." Mohammed stayed for 3 days, trading goods and news. When he left, he took letters from the settlement's residents to loved ones in other parts of the kingdom. Carefully worded messages that wouldn't reveal Wolfhaven's location but would let families know their missing members were safe. Summer deepened into golden warmth. The garden flourished. The hunts were successful. Children grew taller and stronger. The wolves' pups learned to hunt alongside their parents. And Luella, the plain girl with the crooked nose who'd once survived on stale bread and stubbornness, found herself leading a community that had chosen her not because she was beautiful or powerful or noble, but because she'd done one simple thing. She'd seen creatures drowning and refused to walk away. On the first anniversary of pulling the wolves from Black Pine Lake, Luella stood at the edge of the frozen water where it had all begun. The lake looked different in summer, peaceful, its surface reflecting clouds and trees instead of broken ice and desperate struggle. The Alpha King stood beside her, as it always did. A year of partnership had only deepened their bond. They moved together now with the ease of long practice, understanding each other's moods and needs without words. "Do you remember?" Luella asked softly. "How cold it was. How impossible it seemed." The Alpha King's answer was to press its forehead against hers, that gesture of recognition and choice that had become their private language. "I was nobody," Luella continued. "And you were just another wolf. But we saw each other. Really saw each other. And everything changed." Behind them, the sounds of Wolfhaven drifted through the trees, laughter, conversation, the everyday music of people building lives they'd chosen rather than lives forced upon them. "Beauty doesn't matter," Luella said, remembering her father's words. "It's what's inside that counts." The Alpha King huffed agreement, amusement, understanding. "Maybe all three." "He was right," Luella said. "Just not in the way anyone expected." She looked at her reflection in the lake, the crooked nose, the plain features, the weathered skin of someone who lived by the forest's rules. And she saw something she'd never seen before. Not beauty. Something better. Strength. Kindness. The face of someone who'd changed the world by refusing to be changed by it. "Let's go home," she said to the Alpha King. Together, woman and wolf turned away from the lake and walked back into the forest. Back to the settlement where two species had learned to live as one. Back to the family they'd built from freezing water and desperate choices and the simple, radical act of refusing to look away from suffering. The sun filtered through the trees in golden shafts. The forest sang with life. And Luella Martin, once nobody, now the heart of something unprecedented and beautiful, walked forward into whatever came next. With her pack at her side, always with her pack. Dear viewers, as we close this story, I'm curious about something. Luella became an outcast. The moment her father was labeled a criminal, his shame became her identity for 6 years. But the wolves? They didn't care about her past, her crooked nose, or what the village called her family. They only cared about her heart. So tell me, have you ever been judged for something that had nothing to do with who you truly are? How did you break free from that label? Share below. Your story might help someone else. And if you'd like to see more stories like this, a like goes a long way.